Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 236 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return this week to discuss what there is to talk about of the Monaco Grand Prix. Yes, Formula One's best farce of the year returns for another snooze fest in 2025. And if that doesn't get you hyped for the show, I don't know what will. First of all, Jamie, how are we doing, sir?
Doing well. Had the privilege of watching all of Monaco, all 78 laps. And I think on screen we watched one overtake, and that one was swiftly deleted a corner later. So yeah, not a lot to talk about. Not that F1's about the overtaking necessarily, but having a threat of an overtake at the very least is quite a nice feeling to have in a race. But we didn't even have that. So yeah, the whole F1 community at the moment is talking about, does it need a little, what do you say when you put a pet down? Does it need to go to sleep?
Does it need to be put to sleep?
Yeah, so I'm not, I will talk about it later.
Tone. We've immediately
I'm on the fence, to be honest. I don't know yet, but I'll give my opinion later on once I've thought about it.
We will kind of talk about that. Of course, as always, timestamps will be linked down below if you want to just head to a certain point in the show. But let's get into it, of course. One thing I will give credit for, Jamie, is it's the one weekend of the year where I will genuinely try and sit down and watch all of it. In like FP1, FP2, FP3, everything like that. Because it is unique, isn't it, in kind of that way you have to build up.
It is very unique. And the drivers can make a difference. As we actually saw with Charles Leclerc, looked on it. He topped all three practice sessions and a season where Ferrari haven't really been there at all so far. And yeah, they went into it. I think Leclerc went into it thinking probably top five is the best he could hope for. But then he looked like one of the favourites after the practice sessions. A few things happened in practice. A few crashes, obviously. A few blocking problems, obviously, involving Lance Stroll. Yep. And that was on Charles Leclerc, actually, into the hairpin, wasn't it? And Stroll let through one car.
Inside the first 10 minutes of FP1.
Yeah. Stroll let through a car on the outside and then pulled across while Leclerc was also trying to get around the outside. Very last minute. It was definitely not a mirror signal manoeuvre. And Leclerc crashed into the back of Stroll and gets Stroll a one-place penalty. Not that it would make much difference anyway, that one place.
No,
in fact,
exactly.
I don't think it made any difference, did it?
No, in fact, spoiler alert, Lance Stroll picked up another penalty, grid penalty, ready for the weekend, and that still didn't change his
make a difference
by anything either. So, yeah, it's clearly Lance Stroll is just immune to grid penalties, which is quite impressive for the Canadian. Isaac Hadjar, he would make a bit of a mistake in FP2, wouldn't he? Would bin it coming out of the tunnel, just that horrible nick the inside wall through the Nouvelle chicane.
We've all done it.
And then would proceed to damage the suspension even more at turn one. Ollie Bearman would then pick up, I think we could argue, you could either say it was a fair penalty or the worst penalty we've seen in a long time in Formula One, couldn't we? A 10-place grid drop. And I'll be honest, Jamie, I've watched the footage back quite a few times. I couldn't really see a lot he could do without the power of hindsight.
Well, pay attention to the flags would have been a good start, wouldn't it?
He was only shown one.
Yeah. But then he would have had it on his dash as well, because you get the blue flags on the dash, don't you? So, yeah. He didn't slow down as quickly as he could have done. Sainz was obviously going very slow on the inside. Bearman overtook him, running out. Well, just went past him. Wasn't an overtake. And got a 10-place penalty at a track where you can't overtake. So that was a bit sad for him. And yeah, ignoring red flags. Red flags are, you know, one of the most important things in Formula One. You know, you go go-karting, they tell you to respect the flags and respect the marshals. So to not notice the red flag quickly enough, it's a standard penalty. It just is a shame that it was so... He was going full speed, Sainz was basically stopped. And to slow down there would have actually been a little bit dangerous as well, to slam on the brakes that hard, but... Rules are rules at the end of the day, and it's harsh, but I think it's probably fair enough.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like you said, of course, if you've got to be careful, you know, getting on the brakes, you might have Lance Stroll behind you, which, of course, as we've already seen this weekend, he's not concentrating, so he might have just gone straight into the back of Bearman. I felt like it was harsh. I felt like I was quite surprised Haas... It almost feels like with things like that, is Haas will never fight any kind of stewarding decision in that regard.
They might not have the money.
Which always feels a little bit weird. They might not have the money. Perhaps that's it, yeah. They can't afford a lawyer just to go over to the FIA and go, that's not fair. But yeah, that meant obviously Behrmann had a 10-place grid penalty, so unless he could pull out a miracle, he was going to be starting from the back of the field. And then in FP3, Lewis Hamilton, right at the end of FP3, a very costly mistake, tried to do his best, I think it was Verstappen in 2016, wasn't it? A tribute up at the top of the hill. 2018 as
Oh,
well.
Top of the hill was 2016, yeah. 2016, Max used to crash a lot on Monaco, he's grown out of it.
He certainly did. But yeah, then Hamilton would bin it up through Macedonia to Casino Square. So Ferrari did a very good job to get that car built, of course, before we went into the best part of the weekend, which of course was qualifying. And again, we'd kickstart with Lance Stroll, remembering, obviously learning from his mistakes in free practice and not blocking anyone, unless you're Pierre Gasly, which he would proceed to block in the dying stages of Q1.
Exactly. Massenet again, wasn't it? Or was that
Hamilton? No, bottom of the hill. That was Hamilton later on. We'll ignore that for now. This was coming out of the tunnel.
Yeah. And he was just chilling, wasn't he? And Gasly... didn't my podium shout, by the way, predictions didn't go great for me this weekend, but out in 17th wasn't he, Pierre Gasly, because, well, partly because he didn't get a lap in at the end and the track evolution was crazy, so that was a shame for Gasly, but he still out qualified his teammate. And to be honest, I don't know if the Alpine was up to that much this weekend anyway, but he probably should have got through Q1.
Yeah, you think he probably would have had the pace. I mean, he was only a tenth out of making Q2, and you kind of think maybe he could have caused a bit of a surprise. I think it's one of those weird things, isn't it, where we look at Alpine over the last couple of years here being quite good. I hate to admit it, Jamie, but Esteban Ocon's just actually quite good at Monaco, isn't he?
Maybe that's
it. He managed to get the Haas into Q3.
Yeah,
which Ocon is actually going, there's only so many times you can say, oh, the car's well suited to this circuit, when it's the same driver doing it in various cars.
Well, you've been saying that for Max for 4 years at every circuit, so...
Well, that is all the car, of course. Hence why his team... What was it before this weekend, in the last 15 Grand Prix, his teammates have scored 16 points? I think
that's more than I expected, actually, to be honest.
A mad statistic, isn't it? But Antonelli then would bin it right at the end of Q1 as well. That would bring out the red flag and then proceedings. And then Hamilton as well, like you mentioned, would block Verstappen up at the top of the hill because Ferrari told him the car behind had stopped or slowed down even.
Yeah.
So obviously Hamilton went back to the line and then Max flew past him.
There's going to be like a diss track dropped between Ricardo Adami and Lewis Hamilton, I think, at some point. Because they, for whatever reason, they are not getting on.
No. And yeah, it's just that horrible, awkward thing, isn't it? And I think it's that element of Lewis has had one engineer who you would argue is one of the best race engineers on the grid.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've got Ricardo Adami, who, in the nicest way possible,
he's not Bono, is he?
he's certainly no Bono. Not Bono. They just don't have that chemistry, which is, you know, never going to be easy to deal with, but certainly, especially early on in the season, is always going to be more difficult.
And a track like Monaco, where you need pretty much constant communication. The fact they told him...
exactly.
He was coming up the hill to Massenet. They told him Verstappen's behind quick. And then they said Verstappen slowing down. Hamilton gets on with it. And then Verstappen hadn't slowed down. He was still on a hot lap and got a three-place grid penalty.
Luckily, of course, neither of them crashed anything like that. It did make no difference as such. I mean, they even had a handshake afterwards, didn't they?
Yeah.
Like, neither of them were bothered by it, but of course the FIA understandably are. But that would leave us with Bortoleto then out in Q1, Behrmann as well, alongside both Alpines and, of course, Lance Stroll. And then it would get even worse for Mercedes, because, of course, Antonelli's already binned it, so he can't do any running in Q2. And then George Russell's car would break down very weirdly.
Which is a big shame because I put him on pole position.
I did have a laugh when I saw that.
And you know what? He wasn't that far off. And the way Russell turns up at the end...
He was never going to bag pole.
He might not have
Mercedes
got pole.
That Mercedes was never there.
But you never know with George Russell, especially in 2025. He just always pops up in the top three, doesn't he? So that was a shame for me. But it was an even bigger shame for Mercedes and Toto Wolff because, both cars at the track... again, that you cannot overtake at, 14th and 15th on the grid in the car which is currently second in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah,
is quite
painful.
Something.
Very, very painful, isn't it? When you kind of think as well, of course, it doesn't even allow them to, as we spoke about pre-weekend, about doing some ridiculous two-stop strategy and things like that, which was a little bit
shameful. Well, that would make a bit of a
trying,
damn squib
exactly,
anyway,
trying to throw under the bus other drivers and things like that. But Sainz would narrowly miss out on Q3. Tsunoda, who'd actually looked pretty good all weekend up to this point, again, would narrowly miss out on Q3. Nico Hülkenberg, a Sauber, out-qualified both of the Mercedes.
Exactly.
Which is quite funny as well. And then, of course, you know, the big reason why we watch Monaco qualifying. Q3, as it does every year, it did deliver the hype, didn't it? Fastest laps are flying in, here, there and everywhere. But it would be Lando Norris. And I was quite surprised we saw this. But he would shatter the Monaco lap record and the first ever 69-second lap time around here, which was honestly quite impressive.
Yeah, because Lando has not really been on it this season, probably since Australia, I would say. Yeah. Like, in terms of, you know, we've both gone on the record and said we're not massive fans of Lando, but he is probably a top 4 or 5 driver on the grid. And when he's at his best...
On his weekends, absolutely.
Yeah, when he's at his best, he's very, very fast and impressively quick. And we haven't seen that since, yeah, I'd say Melbourne, probably. And to be fair to him, Monaco is a track where, you know, the good drivers come to the top, generally. You know, Ayrton Senna, Graham
the
Hill.
The cream generally rises.
Nico Rosberg.
Cheat.
So I was surprised, to be honest, that Lando Norris did pip Charles Leclerc. I get the feeling the McLaren was probably a step quicker than the Ferrari, so the fact Leclerc was so close was very impressive. But as we know, he's a huge Monaco specialist. And it's mad that this would have been his fifth pole already at Monaco.
I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, about Charles Leclerc could genuinely, like, had all of those pole positions gone right, like, already be in the conversation for Monaco GOAT. Like, yeah. Not even if all of them had gone right, but if more of them had gone right.
Yeah.
Like, he could still, I see, break Senna's record.
Because he's 27, is he?
Yeah, he's at least probably got another 10 years.
And if Ferrari just keep making cars that only do Monaco and Monza somehow, and no other track, then they'll be fine.
Yeah. Exactly. But you know, like I said, I don't know if you watched the ghost comparison they did between Leclerc and Norris's laps. I'm not trying to discredit Lando in any way because, of course, he's still got the job done. But I would say Charles' lap did look tidier. It was just the McLaren, you know, Lando was able to get enough out of the McLaren that its advantage was still there, which is impressive enough at Monaco in the first place. But he gained pretty much all the time in traction zones. Just that McLaren hooks up off of the corners like nothing else. It was where Charles lost everything.
It does, but there is also some element of driver skill involved in getting a car out of a corner.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it was just, if you look at them from a purely, like, an onboard perspective,
yeah.
I would say Leclerc's lap looked more like a good Monaco lap.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
But it's hard to get lucky when you're on pole in Monaco, so we'll give it to him.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah, Norris would take pole then ahead of Leclerc. Piastri in P3. Hamilton, a little bit away in P4, but this has never been a particularly good circuit for him, so I think he was quite happy with that. But of course, that three-place grid penalty, obviously for impeding Verstappen. Verstappen qualified P5, so of course that's actually what happens when he's got the third fastest car, as he qualifies as the third fastest team. Hadjar, shout-outs to him, the best Frenchman this weekend.
Was Hadjar a tenth off Monster. Verstappen, by the way? They should have just swapped.
He was, indeed. That V-car was hooked up. I genuinely would have loved to see what Verstappen could have done in that V-car this weekend. Alonso in 7th, so I can't wait to see what bad luck hits him in the Grand Prix to not score points. ahead of Ocon. Liam Lawson as well did a very good job up in P9 after what has been quite a quiet campaign so far. And of course, Alex Albon in P10 in his Williams.
And Jamie, if Albon had repeated Q2, if Albon had done his Q2 time in Q3, he'd have been 6th. So that was a shame.
I did not know that.
He bottled it basically in Q3.
That is a real shame.
Yeah, it was. But Williams came away with a couple of points. Spoiler. Yeah, we're into race day. There's a lot of fanfare, a lot of buzz around Monaco, as there always is. Sadly, as soon as we're through turn one, that buzz kind of disappears. And even more sadly, Lando Norris almost made a right mess of it, but got away with it.
I mean, we'd seen a pile-up in F2. We'd seen a pile-up in Porsche Super Cup. I was expecting a pile-up at the start.
And Lando Norris gives it the biggest double lock-up for a turn one at Monaco that I've seen in a long time. And just gets the car turned. It would have been hilarious if he just went straight into the barrier at turn one. But he did make it through. Leclerc couldn't get around him. And well, for the front runners, that was that, wasn't it?
Yeah, basically, yeah, from then on, it was kind of, that was it, wasn't it, really? As it is with Monaco every year. We did get one overtake, though, on lap one, didn't we? Gabriele Bortoleto, brilliant move around the outside of Antonelli, down through the hairpin. So Antonelli will return the favour by just immediately putting him in the wall.
Exactly. And I thought this was going to be a stone wall penalty for Antonelli, to be honest.
But I'm staggered it wasn't.
I think, to be fair to the stewards, they were consistent. But the problem is, they were consistent if there was a runoff area there. Because Antonelli did get the apex. He was easily alongside enough for that to be his corner. The problem is, it's Monaco, so you can't really get two cars through anywhere. And
yeah,
Antonelli, obviously, Bortoleto gets shoved into a wall. If this is, you know, Bahrain, if it's anywhere with a runoff area, Saudi turn one, Bortoleto runs off the track, gives the position back, no penalty. But because it's Monaco, running off the track looks like losing your front wing at a barrier. So, yeah, I did feel for Bortoleto because he made a brilliant move at the hairpin and then Antonelli just got one back at him the next corner, put him in a wall and got away with it.
Yeah, I know the FIA got a lot of stick because I think it was Oli Goethe went for a brilliant move in F2 down the inside at Laraskas.
Yes.
Obviously, the other guy, I can't remember who it was he was even overtaking, but forced the other guy out, so of course he had to back out of it. Got a penalty for it because there was a little bit of contact. And like the commentator said, how are you expecting people to make overtakes at Monaco, yeah, like with zero contact and zero the other guy has to back out? Like, that's just the way you have to overtake people here.
Yeah, exactly. And the Goethe move in F2 was a bit like what Leclerc did to Grosjean, or even Bianchi did to Kobayashi, one of the Caterhams, back in the day.
Yeah. Ericsson, I believe it was, but yeah.
Yes. And, you know, there was contact in both of those moves, but they were clean enough. And at Monaco, if you're not making contact, you're not getting passed, realistically.
Exactly. I'm staggered as well that Bortoleto was able to carry on from that. I thought that suspension was going to be bent out of shape, but fair play to him.
It's because he was going about 20 miles an hour in lap one.
It also helped, yeah, exactly. The cars are slightly less fragile at 15 miles an hour. But that would bring out a VSC chain, which immediately raised questions to me. Because we saw Tsunoda and Gasly pit. Why didn't Tsunoda just pit again and try to go to the end? Surely if you're Red Bull, he's out of the points anyway, you throw the dice. Because it doesn't matter.
I guess so. I guess it actually wouldn't have made any difference because if you're last, you're going to get manipulated into next week by the team games that would happen later. So I actually don't think it would have made any difference at all. The pro move was to have your cars near enough each other and in the points because there's no point manipulating for 12, is there?
No, exactly.
I don't think Tsunoda, or to be fair, what happened later on anyway, I don't think anyone 11th or below had a chance of getting into the top 10.
Yeah,
it wouldn't make much difference. But Tsunoda and Gasly did pit.
I was going to say Williams managed it with Sainz.
Well, he didn't overtake anyone. They were 10th and 11th, and Alonso DNF'd.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
He didn't overtake anyone.
Forgot about Alonso's DNF. Fair enough. Yeah, you ignore me on that one then. And then of course we get, why is it always Monaco? Why is it always out of Portier that someone has a brake failure?
That wasn't a brake failure. Gasly
reckons it was.
No, he denied it. He said on the radio, brake failure, when he had one wheel. And it got played as if that was his problem. He said it with Ted in the interview mid-race on Sky, that it wasn't a brake failure. Tsunoda just moved under braking and he lost it.
Did he though? Or did Gasly lock up the rears?
Well, yeah, but why? Yeah, but Gasly, if he was trying to save face, he would say, I had a brake failure. But Gasly was saying, Tsunoda moved under braking, I hit him. But I don't think Tsunoda did move under braking, personally.
No.
Gasly made an error.
Well, the problem is as well, with something, obviously it's a braking zone that isn't in a perfectly straight line.
Exactly.
So people can move.
And
they
it's bumpy.
Have to. And it's very bumpy as well. But, I mean, that was a big shunt, wasn't it? Obviously, it was. Gasly. I mean, how on earth Tsunoda was able to carry on?
I was amazed that Red Bull carried on. They've really made it a Nokia brick, haven't they? In case Verstappen needs to use his car as a weapon at any point. So,
when he inevitably does,
I was astonished at Tsunoda's rear wing ability to withhold that contact. I was also astonished that Pierre Gasly didn't just pull it over with three wheels and one of them was hanging off. I was like, what? There's actually an escape road straight ahead of you. Why are you trying to bring it back to the pits?
Wait, do you mean down at the chicane?
He could have gone straight on at the chicane, couldn't he?
No, he couldn't. He was still in the air.
Oh, I guess. That would have been quite hard. But even so...
He almost wiped out Colapinto. He had so little control. True, which would have been the most Alpine thing in the world. To see their two cars crash again here.
Yeah. But he got it back to the pits. He dropped a bit of debris. But not enough for a virtual safety car. The marshals at Monaco, by the way... Best marshals of the year, quite easily. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Do you remember when Maldonado crashed in 2011 under the virtual? It was a safety car restart.
Brought out to back, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was. He crashed in turn
2011.
One.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
And it was a safety car restart, so it was racing speed. Literally before they came round again, so under a minute, and they'd craned the car up without the need of a safety car. Crazy.
Yeah, it is impressive, kind of the setup they've got in Monaco. I think Matt Amos has done a great video on this. At some point back in the day as well. But Gasly then forced them to close the pit lane, didn't he? Because by the time he tried to stop in his pit box, he ended up down at Williams.
And he had no brakes,
And they were kind of stood there going, what do you expect us to do with this? How are we ever going to pit our cars? There's just an Alpine.
Can you please move your car with three wheels out of the way?
But basically from then on, Jamie, it just came down to, will the two stop making it interesting? And the answer was no.
The answer was a definite no, which is a big shame because we overhyped. Well, I certainly did overhype this. And I apologise to getting all the viewers' hopes up on Friday. That, yes, F1 strategists are too clever to make things entertaining. They're obviously competing for points. They will ruin a race and take it to the corner flag effectively. When they have something to defend.
From the 10th minute after going 1-0 up.
Exactly. So you had the two V-carbs, 6th and 9th. Liam Lawson slows down the entire rest of the pack. So you've got a top 8 and then you've got about 30 seconds, which later became about a minute and later about a lap.
A lap and a half, yeah.
And Lawson slowed down so much that by lap 20, Hadjar had done both pit stops and was still in 8th. And, well, later on, Alonso and Ocon were... like sorted out by the same maneuver basically. So that helped, that worked for V-Carb, and I don't blame them for doing it. It was clever, but it's not really in the spirit of entertainment, is it? But it's not an entertainment show at the end of the day. It's a sport.
The teams aren't there to be entertaining.
Exactly. So I don't blame the teams. I don't blame anyone really. Because it's just how it's going to go in Monaco. We saw the same thing back in Jeddah, which is a much harder track to defend. As in, it's much easier to pass at Jeddah than it is at Monaco. And Magnussen still managed to do it for Hülkenberg back in the day. So, it was always going to happen.
Yeah, and this is kind of what we said, wasn't it? We said last week that either the Grand Prix was going to be fantastic, farcical, or the same as normal. And it was the same as normal.
And farcical,
exactly. Well, we did have a couple of little bits and pieces, didn't we, later on. Alonso broke down. The lack of points continues.
Carries on.
Williams, obviously, basically just saw what V-Carb did and just thought, right, we're going to do that for 9th and 10th, and they nailed that as well. Mercedes then, because Williams were doing that, George Russell just decided to cut the chicane, thinking he'd get a 5-second penalty but could make the time up, and the FIA just went, no, sir, you're getting a drive-through penalty. Took that drive-through penalty, still got back ahead of Albon, who he jumped... by cutting the chicane, which make that make sense, is just incredible.
Yeah. Well, Albon was going 4 seconds lap slower, wasn't he? So three laps or four laps, and you've made that gap up, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the only other thing you had a few drivers, didn't you? Max Verstappen was a great example of this, who was just waiting for a really late red flag so he could make his second pit stop with that, or a safety car or something. Which ultimately, again, because the drivers are too good and the cars are too easy to drive and too big to drive, nothing happened. So he just pit with one lap to go, which is quite funny. I mean, yeah. And let's ask the question, Jamie. Do we still keep Monaco on the calendar? Because this didn't work.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't think we've had a dry Monaco race that's been any good probably since 2017, I would say. And that wasn't even great.
Was that race any good?
Sorry?
Was that race even any good?
Well, it was all right, wasn't it? You had a bit of strategy variation and drivers in the top 10 changed position, which is not a high bar, but compared to this year and last year, what, the only changes we had this race was Hamilton getting back ahead of the two cars he shouldn't have been behind in the first place.
Yep.
And Alonso dropped out, and that was it.
Yep.
So nobody overtook anyone, despite there being apparently more strategy variation. And yeah, I don't know. What I was saying pre-show, what I think, get rid of the two-stop mandate, because that did not work. I think you're being overly stubbornly blind to say that that worked. To be honest, even with one mandatory stop, you'd have still had the same games played, but you'd only had them once.
Oh, exactly, yeah. You just play the games twice instead, yeah.
Yeah. So that's not going to go away just by making it a one-stop again. What you either need to do, genuinely, I never thought I'd say this, bring in a Joker lap. So Russell showed us, you know, if you're a faster car stuck behind a slower car, you get two or three times in the race where you can just jump the chicane, get the track position, and if you've got the pace to drive off, you can drive off. The problem is, there still would be no overtakes, effectively, because the only overtake would be done by the Joker lap. But that would be quite interesting because it had a different element of strategy. When are you going to use them? Do you use them to get track position? Do you use them on an undercut or an overcut attempt? Stuff like that. Do you use it on the last lap if you're the faster car just so they can't get you back? Yeah, I think that would be another interesting thing. Again, not sure it would work, but it would at least be worth a try.
They'd all just take it the first three laps. You just have 20 cars flying through the new.
I'm not sure you would take it the first three laps, though.
I feel that at the front you would.
But at the front, if you take yours, if you're in the lead, if you're in the lead and you take it the first three laps, the guy behind you doesn't. Yes, he might lose track position.
So the guy behind him does, and then you pull away.
Exactly, maybe. And then if you have
just exactly the same thing happens as the two pit stops,
I guess. But the interesting thing would be if you save it for the very last lap and have the pace to stick with the car ahead, you could then use it to win, effectively. But it's about, you know, say for instance, in this race, Norris and Piastri both take it at the very start, Leclerc doesn't, then all you'd get would be Piastri backing up the whole field. So,
yeah.
I don't think, maybe that wouldn't work either. Maybe we just get rid of Monaco.
I mean, it does, as we've said before, you either change the cars, fix the cars, or, you know, and it is a shame, isn't it? Because I said about this last week that Monaco doesn't deserve to come off the calendar, but you get to the point where you're kind of there going, it also can't really stay on the calendar, can it, as it is?
Yeah.
But then again, you think, on the other hand, of course, it is still a great spectacle. Qualifying is still fantastic every year, without a doubt. And as I said, it's still the only race weekend of the year where I'm excited to watch FP1, 2 and 3 as well. You just do not get that anywhere else.
It's true, but you have
to... It just all comes at the expense of the Grand Prix being terrible.
Yeah, it all comes at the expense of everyone tuning in for Sunday will be disappointed. Because you are never going to get a good dry race at Monaco unless the cars get 75% smaller.
No, exactly. Can we just for 1 second, Jamie, I don't know if you've seen this, appreciate Lance Stroll's overtake on the last lap.
Oh,
which
crazy.
He didn't see on TV.
The
he
one overtake
after
in the race.
A weekend of giving him stick, nailed that.
He did. I will caveat that Hülkenberg was on about 25 lap old soft tyres, so...
That sounds like a Hülkenberg problem.
Well, I guess, but yeah, and it really paid off for Stroll because he, you know, finished, what, 16th?
Rather than 16th, something like that. Yeah.
But yeah, that was the end of the race, and not a lot happened. Charles Leclerc didn't win. I read that a wrong name. Neither Norris won. Charles Leclerc was second from Oscar Piastri on the podium. Max Verstappen, fourth. Hamilton, Hajar, very good. Ocon, very good. Have you already done this?
No.
No? Okay, good. I got a really mad deja vu.
I read out qualifying and it was similar.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I got confused. Liam Lawson, first points of the year. Well done.
Yep, Alex, ahead of Alonso.
Alex Albon and Carlos Sainz, ninth and tenth for Williams. And James Vowers and Toto Wolff had a bit of a spat in the paddock afterwards.
That was so funny.
Yeah, the Williams strategy basically screwed over Mercedes, who were just waiting forever to do their only stops.
Yep.
And Yeah, absolutely messed it up.
Jamie, I'm going to do your quiz because you accidentally kind of touched on it a minute ago.
Okay.
Obviously, the 2025 Monaco Grand Prix was bad, but it wasn't as bad as the 2024 Monaco Grand Prix. Okay. Of course, last year's Monaco Grand Prix was known for being the first ever race in Formula One where all of the top 10 finished exactly where they started.
They did.
Or where they qualified. You, Jamie, have got to give me that top 10 in the right order. No skipping. You get one wrong, gosh. It's over.
Oh, dear.
I thought this is a really easy but horrible quiz.
So, Charles Leclerc won. Get that one out of the way.
He did.
Oscar Piastri.
Let's not forget, ladies and gents, Jamie got two on his quiz a couple of weeks ago.
I did.
Correct.
Oscar Piastri was second. Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari was third. When he went off in lap one, didn't he? And then got reinstated.
Yep.
I think Lando Norris was fourth.
He did. Or he was, I should say.
And then Max was either fifth or sixth, I think. I can't for... I guess Hamilton was still around at Mercedes, wasn't he? Oh, dear. This might be the end. I'll say George Russell was fifth.
Correct.
That means Max must have been sixth.
Correct.
When he should have bought his pillow on the team radio.
Yep.
Oh, did Tsunoda do well? Probably in the V-Carb. Well, Hamilton must have been somewhere. He wasn't that bad, was he? The Haases obviously were both out. Perez was out. The Alpines were pretty awful. I don't think they got points. I will say it was Lewis Hamilton next.
Correct.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Am I down to
you're
eight?
You're up to seven. You're doing well. Hey?
Eighth place.
Eighth place. In the 2024 Monaco Grand Prix, JB183 was...
Yuki Tsunoda.
Correct.
Really? I'm actually very happy with that.
You got two more. If you
two
nail
more.
This, I'm going to be so impressed.
That's a V-Carb. What other cars are good? I really can't remember who else was good last year. It was all about Haas, Alpine and V-Carb, wasn't it? Oh, maybe Fernando Alonso?
Incorrect, I'm afraid.
Who was not?
Alonso
was it Ricardo?
11th. It was not. Ricardo wasn't there.
Wait, what? Oh, were it... was he not?
No, because he didn't come back to V-Carb till halfway through the year.
That was the year before, wasn't it?
Was it? Wait, oh yeah, he was. Sorry, ignore me. He was 12th.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, and then who was ninth? Tell me who was
it
ninth.
It was Alexander Albon in P9. Oh, I believe it was Williams' first points last year.
And then Gasly 10th, I want to say.
It was Gasly in 10th, yes.
Oh, I might have got that. That's annoying.
Yeah, you could have got there. You could have got there, Jamie.
Never mind.
But you did very well, 8 points.
2009 8 standards, points I got all the point scorers.
Exactly. Driver of the day, JB183.
Oh, was any of them driver of the day?
I think Lando, probably just because he won to pole and got fastest lap. I think it's hard to argue against it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll give him that. I'll give it Lando Norris.
And predictions, I think our last thing we need to do today. Yeah.
As we know, mine were horrendous, but it was 26-19 to me before this.
Yep.
And I predicted a George Russell domination, which, you know, he dominated 11th place, but he didn't quite get the...
Didn't
quite get the pole on the wind double.
Yeah.
So no points for me on that. I then said Piastri second and Gasly third. So I get 1 point. And it's quite impressive that two of my podium finishers didn't even get points.
That's good going in this. Unless they've crashed into each other, that is very good going.
Yeah.
So 1 point for Jamie. I said Piastri pole, didn't quite happen. I also said Piastri win, but he was on the podium, so I get 1 point there. I said Lando Norris P2, so I get a point there. And I said Charles Leclerc P3. So I'm a little bit gutted that I got all of the podium finishers
in the wrong order.
Which is a little bit of a shame, because didn't I hyped up Ferrari for the weekend?
So that takes me up to 27. Nico Hülkenberg.
Yep.
And you're up to 22. Bit of Jensen Button.
Wonderful. I'm closing you in. I'm closing in that gap. Jamie, have we got anything else to add?
I don't think we've got anything to add. What would you do with Monaco in the comments section? Bring back the sprinklers. Well, bring in the sprinklers, maybe. Yeah, I think it might be, in the words of Claude from AFTV, it might be time to go.
I do not know what you're referring to.
I'm sure someone will.
But fair enough. I don't know whether I should know that. It was just an awful accent or what. But
you would.
I had no idea.
It wasn't an accent. You should know what I mean. But you don't follow football, so fair enough.
I don't, exactly. Premier League's over now, isn't it? If I'm not mistaken.
It is. 3 months off.
There you go.
Without the pain of fantasy.
Only time for real sport now with a Formula One.
You can't claim F1's a real sport, I'm afraid.
No, there is also that. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. Jamie and I quickly just want to add that we apologise in advance if we're a little bit all over the place over the next few weeks. Jamie's, of course he is, he's going on holiday because he spends half his life doing that. What a life it is for young 183. Where are you off to this time, Jamie? Just tell the viewers.
Off to America. I'm excited.
Off to America again.
Fly out on
Thursday.
Macon, Georgia, which no one will know where that is. But there you go.
I know Georgia.
Got some friends over there.
It's near Augusta.
It's a few hours south of Atlanta Airport. There you go.
Fair enough. And I'm going to hopefully be trying to move house. So we apologise in advance if things are a little bit different. Thank you all as always, though, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you drop us a follow, drop us a like, all that good stuff. Let us know what you think they should do with the Monaco Grand Prix. And Jamie and I will be back very soon with more Knowing Wheel.